Consider and take possible action to adopt the actuarial evaluation of the OPEB benefit, or of OPEB as of 12/31/18. Christina.
So at the end of 2018, CSERA established an irrevocable 115 trust to fund the benefits of the CSERA retirees who were employed by CSERA and then retired on or after January 1st, 2015. A little bit after that, the board also adopted a funding policy to fund that 115 trust, and within the funding policy, it provided that we would complete a biannual actuarial evaluation to determine what the ADC and any annual funding that needed to be placed into the 115 trust. So in line with that, we had Milliman, this is John Botsford from Milliman, complete a evaluation report to see what that funding would look like.
Thank you. Thank you, Mr. Chairman. So does everybody has a copy of this report? So I'll briefly take you through it, but just to kind of make sure everybody's clear on what we're going through, the GASB 75 for your OPEB liabilities is analogous to GASB 68 on the pension. So I know you're very familiar with the pension costs and what goes in there, but I'll briefly review some of the terminology just to make sure everybody's clear. And of course, this is just for the staff plan, not for the, of course, the entire CSERA member group. So the staff plan, you have as of January 1st, 2018, 52 active staff members and 4 retirees. They're your data. So a fairly small group. And CSERA offers retiree health care benefits for them. So we have to account for them very similar to how we account for pension long-term pension liabilities. So a couple of the key terms, the term total OPEB liability, this is analogous to your total pension liability, and this is very similar to what was historically called the actuarial accrued liability. For retirees, it's simply the present value of projected future benefit payments. For actives, it's also the present value of projected future benefit payments, but it's a pro rata share based on their past service relative to their future service. So we allocate the costs of OPEB liabilities, not all in 1 year when an employee is hired, but throughout the entire working career. So the total OPEB liability captures the portion of the liability attributed to their service to date. So for instance, if somebody's expected to work 30 years and they're in year 15, roughly half of their present value of future benefits would be captured in the total OPEB liability. A little bit of a simplification, but that's the general concept. And then service cost is simply the value of the benefits that we want to attribute to the current year of service. So we're going to allocate for each active employee a service cost. Since retirees are already retired and there's no more service, there's no service costs associated to retirees. Now, in terms of funding, the idea is to align the assets with the total OPEB liability. Once the assets equals your total OPEB liability, then contributions going forward would simply be your service cost or a portion of benefits attributed to current year service. in 2018, I know you had been setting aside money in kind of a side trust or a side account, I should say, but in 2018 you've established a Section 115 trust that Christina mentioned, and that's important because the assets, in order to be considered assets, have to be irrevocable in an irrevocable trust and earmarked for the purpose of paying retiree health care benefits. And so during 2018, in fact, at the end of 2018, about $2.5 million was moved into the Section 115 trust. So I'll take you through the valuation as of 1/1/18, and we'll project to 12/31/18, but you'll see zero assets at the beginning of 2018 and then $2.5 million at the end of 2018. If we go to I'll go through the numbers and then I'll briefly hit the main assumptions for you. So if we look at Exhibit 1, page 4 of your report. The total OPEB liability as of December 31st, 2018, for your fiscal year ending, was $4.7 million, and net fiduciary position, which is another word for market value of assets, was $2.5 million.
John, who came up with that terminology? I had to look it up. I didn't know what it meant.
John, the accountants did.
Presumably.
Looking at the accountant in the room. But thanks for setting that up. The actuaries can't take credit for that one.
You don't want to.
So the good news is you went from 0% funded to 54% funded. So, and again, you have a plan. You have adopted a funding policy to fund a contribution each year such that you will fund your liabilities over a period of 30 years. So you've got a pretty good head start with $2.5 million that's moved in there. So you're over 50% funded. But the contribution that you would be funding over time would be the service costs that I mentioned, plus an amortization of your unfunded liability, which is your net OPEB liability, over the next 30 years on a level dollar amount and starting from 2018. So that 54% over time will gradually increase.
I had a question.
Yes.
Because I can't recall how we established it, but did we set the discount rate at 6.75% for the OPEB purpose?
No.
Okay. So we have an assumed rate of return here that's different than what the fund has, right?
Right. And I believe the investments are a little bit different than what the Cicera fund is. Let's go to that.
Yeah, I mean, I'm looking at the explanation or the rationale on page 2, and I felt like we kind of backed into the discount rate, so I need to understand how we
yeah.
got to it.
No, we have some detail. Let's go to page 11 of the report. So page 11, you can see a development of the 6.75% rate. So you are currently funding this is currently in an irrevocable trust, but it's invested a little bit differently than how your Cicera assets are invested, I believe.
No, I got it. I mean, it says we've used a discount rate of 6.75% in this valuation to reflect Cicera's current policy of funding its OPEB liabilities. I don't think we established 6.75% as a policy for OPEB, did we? Or did we?
The board didn't, and Cicera staff didn't throw a dart at the dartboard and say, okay, we're going to do 6.75.
And I didn't
That's
mean to
not
apply
how we,
a dart throw.
I wasn't saying
I'm just saying it's different than our assumed rate of return, and I'm just trying to understand how we arrived at it, because it's not a policy that we set.
Yeah, so let me take you through what you did, and of course you can give us feedback and tell us exactly what what you'd like to use, but I'll just tell you how we've arrived at that, and then but this is, you use PARS, Public Agency Retirement Services, to manage your assets. Okay. And so what we looked at is we look at how those assets are invested by asset class, and you can see the target asset allocation, 20% in domestic equities, 5% in, that's large cap equities, 5% in small cap, another 20% in international developed equity, another 15% in emerging markets international. So you've got, 60% just in straight up equities, plus you've got about, call it close to 40% in fixed income. So with 60% equities, 40% fixed income, I mean, that's high level what your mix is. What we do is we come up with expected returns on those assets that you can see in the other column there by asset class. And then we look at the long-term return of those investments. We're estimating geometric return and not arithmetic return. Everybody knows what that is? Okay. Arithmetic return, if you get 6.75 every single year, arithmetic return and geometric return are the same. But at 6.75%, one year it's 13.5, and another year it's 0, and that goes back and forth, ping pongs for the next 30 years, you're going to be under 6.75%. There'll be a drag of, so in reality, if you add these numbers up and these expected returns by asset class, you're going to get above 6.75, But when we factor in the variation of returns from year to year, that's what we call the geometric return. That's what really you're going to see overall with that drag of up and down. And that's what comes out to 6.82. And so that's why 6.75% is what we're projecting. Now, again, this is your assumption. You can decide what you'd like to use. But this was the methodology that we came up with to for this particular assumption.
So in the question I asked, I was comparing apples and oranges.
You're looking at Sarah in a nice way, right?
So different mix of investments to fund OPEB has nothing to do with the portfolio that we manage with respect to the fund assets.
Yeah.
But so I'm just left to the last bit, which is the reference to the policy having been established. I didn't think we had done that.
Yeah, well, the policy or the investment policy, if you've given your money to public agency retirement services, I'm assuming that they've been directed to invest assets in a certain manner. So they've got various portfolios that they offer you. And so they've got moderately aggressive, conservative, very aggressive, somewhere in between, balanced. And so, you know, they're going to look at you and they're going to say, either the board or staff, and say, tell us how you want us to invest your assets. And then at some point, a box was checked that says, we want you to invest it this way, moderately aggressive, or however that, whatever it was. And that came up with this, you know, 60-40 balance that you see here. And so based on that, and maybe the wording isn't quite right in terms of the establishment of the policy, but and we can, you know, wordsmith it to make it clear, but, you know, based on the direction that was given to public agency retirement services and investing assets with this type of allocation, that's the basis of how we set, or how we, what our recommended 6.75% assumption is.
Okay, and I think I am more hung up on the issue of whether we did or didn't establish a policy. We have other policies on our docket today, and we spent a lot of time doing it.
Right.
So when I read that, I just didn't quite remember doing that.
And I can appreciate that, and that's certainly, especially as these go into the public record and everybody's, you know, where's the policy, we can make it more clear and say this is, you know, based on how public agency retirement services and investing in these assets change a little bit, so we're not referencing a policy, so to speak, that you obviously, I know, spent a lot of time developing.
You know. Yeah.
Okay. Thanks.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, and question. So, sorry.
If you're not done with that subject, go ahead.
So we took a look at the objectives of the trust and these assets and took a look at what was available with PARS, and Tim can talk a little bit more about that. But we came up with, okay, yeah, we're going to have this much in this allocation and this much in this space. And we provided that information to Milliman, and Milliman generated this 6.75.
Okay.
So that was kind of the process behind it.
Yeah, I guess my recommendation would be, in terms of how we handle the report, I would ask that it be revised in that one respect.
Yeah.
Because we didn't establish the policies. Really, we provided direction as to what the portfolio should look like, and that generates, based on that construct, a return roughly as, you know, close to 6.75. Looks like it's 6.82, but whatever.
Right.
I would make that change just because it's not something that we did.
Yeah, absolutely.
Okay. That's fair.
Okay.
Jerry?
One way of simplistically looking at this is that this is 54% funded, if you will.
Mm-hmm.
And you have said that's a good start. I heard that.
Yes.
You've also said that over the course of time, we will bring it down a little year after year after year. Is there an advantage, even from a public appearance standpoint, to trying to pay this mortgage down a little faster, making contributions that are in excess of what the annual expectation would be to increase that funding ratio?
There can be. With regard to OPEB liabilities, retiree, you know, healthcare liabilities, there's a number of them that are out there that are not funded at all. So the
that's not the direction I'm thinking about.
No, what I'm saying is at 54%, if are people going to be viewing that as in a negative light, many might say, well, you're already 54% and you're better than a lot of the ones out there, and you have a plan to get to 100. But with that said, to the extent you're going to know better than I do how the public might view this particular fund and the funding level and what the optics are. But if I look at your overall fund and you've got, you know, whatever, a couple billion dollars in there, and that's, you know, to me, that's what I think everybody would be focused on. And then there'd be a staff plan, and it's, you know, two and a half million assets, 4 million in liabilities. It's 1/10 of whatever 1% of your overall what you're managing. That's the bigger picture. So I wouldn't think that that would get that kind of attention unless it's an issue of, you know, the shoemaker doesn't have shoes for his kids type thing, and 54% isn't very good. And if there's those types of optics, and it makes it more sense for you to put more cash in there to bring that percentage up, great. But I that would be a decision for the board in terms of how fast you want to do that.
I understand, and that's what I'm proposing to the board, if you will. I'm thinking more in terms of the simplistic comparison that someone might suggest, that this is a plan, albeit a very different plan, that's 54% funded. And the comfortable defense to that is not to say it's really low, but not as low as some other people. That seems to me a negative defense. So I'm wondering whether or not we should consider making greater contributions to this and shorten this mortgage.
Are you thinking like shortening the amortization period from like 30 to something that matches what we do here?
That's 18. One way to handle it, or just consideration of just fixed contributions.
Or just pay it off.
Right? Or that's another way.
Because if it's paid off, then it's out of nothing to think about going forward, right?
We would still have valuations.
The liability does not stay static.
No, when I say pay as you go, I don't mean pay as our retirees retire. That has a whole different context. But ideally, yes, we're pushing the can down the road. And ideally, when we're paying our employees, we should be paying the full cost of their future health care costs. We shouldn't have this lingering OPEB. So I agree with Jerry. I don't think 50% funded for OPEB is good. And it's something in the county that we've been working very hard, where we're putting $20 million in a year to reduce our OPEB liability. I would like to always see everything 100% funded in a perfect world. I don't know that that's realistic, but I think we should be much more aggressive than being comfortable at 50%.
I agree.
I would think if we shorten the amortization, then we at least still have like the dollar cost averaging, and we're not just putting a big bet in all at once.
Mm-hmm. Well, as long as we have a plan where we can demonstrate where we're going to be and how quickly, we're not just, again, remaining static, but we're, mm-hmm. if we shorten the amortization period, then we're at least paying an additional principal, you know, besides the mortgage payment, so to speak.
But it still looks, in that case, as if you're still nibbling away at it, you're just taking bigger bites. And I'd suggest we maybe split the difference, you know, whether or not we pay off the whole thing as it currently stands. I understand that changes from year to year, or we just increase the amortization period. It seems to me there's some middle ground, and we are.
It's showing a plan,
I agree.
It's a little bit semantics whether or not we're saying, okay, every year we're going to add an additional, you know, $1 million into it, or if we're saying instead we're going to have a higher payment because our amortization period is shorter.
Correct, I agree.
My vote, for whatever it's worth on this, is 15 years as opposed to 30. If you were to put the entire amount in, and then we start earning 8% a year, fairly quickly we're overfunded. What in the world are we doing with an overfunded plan? How do you deal with that in an irrevocable trust? I mean, this is just from a visibility point of view, I like the shorter amortization period, particularly reasonably tying to what we ask for in funding the overall pension plan.
Right. I agree. Yeah.
So I agree with what you're saying. So you're saying, so from my edification, 15 years and having it at 100%.
Yeah. Having raised the issue, could we ask the staff to make a recommendation on various ways we could take a bite at this apple?
Yeah, maybe show us two options, bring it back with the goal being that we'd like to eventually achieve full funding.
Your thoughts, Kel?
Yeah.
I mean, I think it's we've followed kind of a step approach. It's like, okay, we separated and became our own employer. We took a look at this retiree responsibility that we've set up. And, you know, we set up the 115 trust last year. Now we're taking a look at, okay, what does that mean, having this on a long-term basis? you know, and taking a look at it in the bigger scheme of things of what we're here for, right? Like, we're here for managing this pension plan of, you know, $8.2 billion now. And, you know, we could today move $2 million in there and be fully funded, but that would be $2 million taken away from the pension plan, right, that, you know, is doing what it needs to do there. So I think that, I mean, at the end of the day, whether this is 54% funded or 100% funded, it's a good place to be in. It's a good discussion, I think, as fiduciaries, for us to have. And we can definitely bring back some other options on the amortization, shortening the amortization period, or, I mean, we can take a look at it and bring back a couple different options for the board to consider.
The other thing that would be helpful to include as well, because of course this would be coming out of the administrative side of the ledger, is how will it affect our employee and our employer contributions if we were to lump sum fully funded? Would it have because again, we annually give those administrative costs to our employers and our employees. Or if we were to amortize over 15 years, what would the cost be? Because I think that would make a difference, too. Because I'm assuming that if we did a lump sum at once, which isn't my inclination, we would pass that on immediately to our employers and employees, which would be a big jump in their contribution.
Especially since we have the explicit admin load now.
Well, exactly.
That first year cost would be...
Right, because before we used to roll it in, but now we don't. So we need to be cognizant of that, and so I think that would be an important component of whatever we do.
Okay. Yeah, and having said that, $2 million isn't, you know, it's not going to move, I wouldn't expect it to move the needle a huge amount,
uh-huh,
but it is something that we can take a look at.
Yeah, and that's good to know then. I mean, yeah, just, but again.
Mm-hmm. But that first year impact would be larger than if we were to smooth it out the way that we're looking at doing it now. Yeah,
and that's not the only. I mean, by paying it down, yeah, it doesn't have to be 100%. There can be plenty of things in between, or just a straight amortization. I'd like to see some choices.
Okay.
And what the impact would look like.
Yeah, we can bring back some choices at a near meeting, since we are working. We're closing the books on.
Right.
No, and we're fine.
Yeah, I'm okay with that.
Yeah. Sure.
Sometime in the next 6 months is fine with me. I just want to have a long-term plan in place.
Well, and I'm just thinking about our CAFR and our disclosures,
right,
for last year and that kind of thing.
Just so long as near as
2019.
2019.
2019.
That's the wrong year.
1919.
Well,
some
that's
of us
really good. I like to roll up a lot of data.
David?
So the 30-year was proposed because that's kind of like the normal way to approach it, correct? In this circumstance, but I mean, are there any advantages?
Not necessarily. I'm sorry, not to interrupt you, but it's not necessarily the normal. I mean, we had a much shorter amortization period.
Why the proposal for the 30, and what would be the advantages to making it a shorter period of time?
Yeah, no, the 30 was, and I can't remember if we had specific direction on at one point where it was the idea was to amortize it over 30, or this was, there was just we're going to fund it, and we know we're going to be putting this in, and
Rusty.
But 30 is the maximum I would go. But historically, particularly if you're starting at a very low, and at one point you didn't have any assets, mm-hmm, in there, so a lot of times with cash flow issues, as a lot of agencies, yeah, would say, well, let's get a 30-year plan in and fund it over and be done with it at 30 years because, you know, we're starting from zero. While you were starting at zero, you really weren't, because I think you had a bunch of money set aside somewhere that was not an irrevocable trust that you moved over. So really you were starting at 50%. And, you know, with that said, and given that you would like to get there sooner, I mean, we would just look for direction from you in terms of what you'd like to do. We can show you whatever options you like, and it's almost no work to say what's the amortization at 15 years versus 10, or put another. The other thing I would ask is, I know you said 54% doesn't sound too good. You know, that's the glass half empty versus half full. What does sound good? In other words, you know, if it was 75% right now, and you have a plan to close the gap over the next 10 or 15 years, does that sound better? Or is that, you know, because that may be your kind of partial, well, another $1 million gets you there.
Well, I was wondering what the advantages were to
to each approach, if we go with 30 versus a 15 versus, you know, just paying it all off?
I guess the advantage would be if, one, 30 years is if you had a cash flow issue, but that may not be the issue here. But, you know, but there is some consideration with, as mentioned earlier, that, you know, you're moving money from the pension fund into here. So, but the other is, yeah, you can do, someone mentioned, if you put all the money in at one time, there may be some exposure to if the market goes down. So then what's the right number? You know, 30 years is a long time. 15 years is, you know, a lot shorter. The other thing is, as you get more money in now, you know, setting aside the downside risk of a shock downward, in general, if you have money in and you invest in something earlier, it has more chance to build up investment returns, so that more of your money is being paid for through investment returns rather than contributions. So that's the obvious advantage of funding it sooner rather than later.
Well, so the other thing is, if we put a bigger chunk into it now, then we don't have to worry so much about investment returns. We don't have to get as risky in our investments, right? So,
well, I think if we put a large chunk in now, we wouldn't have the opportunity of a market essentially going up. If we knew the market was going to tank, we could put the money in now, and that we have, no? But somebody's shaking their head in the background.
No.
I think we should always consider a look at the investment returns.
Staff, give us our options.
Yeah, we should see options.
Give us some options.
Okay.
Yeah. And that's what I'm thinking. If we're looking at shortening the time, mm-hmm. the payoff time, you should. Would that also affect the allocation? How much would be put in equities versus fixed income? Would we go more conservative as we become more fully funded?
Tim?
So we're less exposed to loss.
Any thoughts on that, Tim?
I would actually refer that to John in terms of the duration of the liabilities. I mean, the duration of liabilities doesn't change, so.
Yeah, I was just gonna add that, you know, you can put more money in, and you know, right now it's, you know, $4.7 million, you know, is your present value of future liabilities, so to speak. If you fund it to $4.7 million and then you moved it all to fixed income, the present value of future benefits is no longer $4.7 million because your expected future returns are going to be a lot lower under a fixed income.
$10 million.
Right? So then you're going to be a $6 or $7 million. So you have to kind of balance that as well. Yes, and that becomes that kind of risk reward tolerance that, you know, you go through on the pension side, same thing.
So the options in a future meeting makes sense to me.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Well, how often would you have to true it up if the market goes down to get it back to where it was?
You wouldn't necessarily have to.
We would do evaluation every 2 years.
Every 2 years?
Right. And it's just like your pension fund, you've got to true that up as well, and it's the same kind of mechanics,
right,
where you have,
so,
you know, amortization and so on and so forth.
Christina, are our employees tier one and tier four?
For the pension side?
Yeah.
Yes.
So if you turn to page 13 in the disability percentages, you have them broken out by a non-PEPRA and PEPRA, but if they're all tier one and tier four, wouldn't it just be this non-PEPRA? There's no differentiation. I mean,
there shouldn't be, yeah.
Right, because I think they're thinking of PEPRA like almost like a tier three, because these are our tier three percentages, because they have the substantial gainful employment and in it. All of our employees, whether you're PEPRA or non-PEPRA, you're just as likely to have a disability, right? So the only reason to have a difference would be if there's different rules, but they have the same rules, right?
They do have the same rules.
So maybe we can get rid of the extra column.
It's interesting observation.
Well, and it's funny too, because since, and we can.
I mean, I know for retirement, that makes total sense because they have different rules,
right,
and different benefits, in fact. But for tier one and tier four, if they're the same, I think it, logically to me, we would just need one rate.
But Todd, just something to consider, I've considered this for public safety, is that it may not apply as much to these employees, but as PEPRA members age, they have a greater date of retirement eligibility, so that could actually increase disabilities. because you're essentially having people work longer in their ages.
I totally understand, so, but just to be consistent with our pension side, on our pension side, we consider Tier 1 and Tier 4 the same in terms of disability. Mm. So, just a thought.
Yeah, these disability rates were, we use the CSERA rates for them and your pre-PEPRA mm-hmm. and PEPRA. And you're right, it's the benefits themselves are going to be the same. Really, the only difference, and I think that the effect on the liabilities is extremely small.
Oh, absolutely.
But the only difference I can think of is that we use slightly different mortality for healthy versus disabled, I believe. Yeah, there's a set forward, so there's the mortality is a little bit different. So depending on whether they're PEPRA or non-PEPRA, regardless of that, if the assumption is that you're retiring due to disability, mm-hmm. then your mortality is this. If you're retiring due to not disability, your mortality is that. Again, we're talking about 0.01 and 0.02 type numbers percent.
Yeah, we don't have to spend a lot of time on it. I'll just ask that you work with staff and look, because it is a little bit different than on our pension side.
Yeah, we can simplify that.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
Do you have any more on your presentation?
Well, that was I was going to go over the accounting numbers, but okay. The funding was a lot more interesting. And it was a great discussion. So, I think that's really the, I think Exhibit 3, I'll just cover that real briefly because that's the accounting side, and then we'll wrap it up. But this just is really the disclosures, and you can see, as I mentioned, the assets were zero, and they've gone to $2.54 million at the end of the year. And your total OPEB liability, that's the left column there, we started at $4.3 million, and this reconciles, if you look from $4.3 to $4.7 million in the total OPEB liability, how did we get there? The service cost, as I mentioned, was about $180,000. And then there's an interest on the total OPEB liability of about $300,000. And remember, as you build up those assets, you're going to have expected actual returns on assets that will, if those two are in balance, then your interest on the total OPEB liability would approximately equal what the investment returns on are on the asset side. And then benefit payments of about $50,000, as I mentioned, to those four retirees. And that brings us to the $4.7 million. Now, the next valuation that occurs, you will start to see some numbers in those zeros. Mm-hmm. One is if there's a change in assumptions, it will show up there, and as well as any kind of difference between actual and expected experience, as we, this being the first GASB 75 valuation, that's why that shows up as zero. So are there any other questions? I think we've got some direction on some funding options, but other than that.
So the accounting nerd in me is just curious what we're intending. So we have this ADEC here for 536, and it's obviously going to change if we change the amortization table. Is it our intent to send whatever that ADEC number is to the trust, or are we going to send that number less our PAYGO expenses?
No, that number would go into the trust.
Okay.
Can I make a quick comment on the ADEC there?
Mm-hmm.
So that was for 2018. So we that represents that calculation of the 322,000 was as of the beginning of 18. There was no assets, so that would have been the ADEC starting at no assets. Now in 2019, the ADC is going to be a little bit different because now you've got $2.5 million. So still expected that service cost is probably going to be in the ballpark of that $180,000. That's going to be fairly, maybe up a couple percentage points. But the amortization of the OPEB liability, that 322, that if you stuck with the 30 years, which it sounds like you won't, would probably get cut in half. But if we drop it down to 15 years, you might be back to similar to that $300,000. And so you might be in the ballpark of that $500,000 in 2019. But we can run those scenarios for you, and then you can pick what you'd like, and then set your contribution policy.
But if we were to just go with this, that would be the number that we'd be putting in there. And then, in addition, is the county retirees that we have prior to that date that we are doing pay-as-you-go on.
And I only ask because I was hoping we would send this amount, but you know, you could say you you satisfied your ADEC if you netted it with your pay-go costs, right?
Yeah. Okay. I'm good.
Dale, for those retirees that, are with the county, you just paying the pay-as-you-go?
Yeah.
Any part of that $20 million also that's being set aside?
No.
Yeah, these four retirees were all ones that retired after 1/1/15, when Cicera became a separate entity. So the retirees before were still the county.
Which we are
that,
doing
that are not in here.
On.
Yeah, just pay as you go.
Yeah. Any other questions or comments? All right.
I'll move adoption with the request that the report be edited to indicate that the assumed rate of return is based on the desired allocation that was presented to PARS.
Yep.
With that, I'll move it.
Is this an item that you can, I'll look to legal? Since the recommendation is to adopt and we don't have the document to adopt, I'm looking for direction if this motion is necessary at this time?
Well, since there's a discussion about the funding policy and whether the amortization period should change, I would think that needs to be done first before adopting.
So, Scott, your recommendation is to adopt the report that they have with the 30 years.
I was moving to accept the February 18, 2019 report, which is in the packet and which was presented to us with the edit that I requested with respect to the assumed rate of return, because I thought that's what was on the docket today.
Yeah.
I thought we were, the issue before the House was whether we were going to accept this report.
So my understanding is that this report is based on a 30-year amortization funding policy, and so the board is thinking about possibly adopting a different amortization period. I would think the report would look different. Is that right, John?
Yeah.
A little bit.
It would.
Well, we may not decide that for 6 months, right? So I'm.
Yeah.
This is based on your existing.
Right. This reflects the state of actuarial fact as of today, correct?
Right.
Based on the funding policy.
Right. Based on the fund.
Based on a 30-year amortization period.
Right. And so that may change, but with respect to what we have in place now in the current policy, this is the report for us. So
I agree.
I'd still move to accept it with the caveat regarding the change.
I have a question.
Was there a second?
If we adopt it as it's been presented, and we decide to go with a 15-year amortization rather than a 30-year amortization, can we re-adopt?
We don't need to. It just reflected a future report.
Right.
There's no reason. We just take what we have. As Scott said, it is what it is as of today.
Right.
This is our valuation, and we're going to bring back sometime this year to have this further discussion. We might adopt a new policy, and it'll reflect the next time we have an actuarial evaluation.
So it won't affect changes in the future if we decide to make changes?
Nothing. All this is just saying, here we are.
To quote our former vice president, this is what transparency looks like.
All right.
And because of this report, it spurred this whole discussion where we said, we don't want to spread it out over 30 years. We don't want to have this big funded. So,
and I don't have any problems with it. I was just asking for a point of order.
Yeah. And upon adoption of, if the board does opt to adopt the report, we would be looking at putting the 500 and so 1,000 into the trust this year.
Uh-huh.
But we will come back this year with some other options and see if we want to tweak it for the next valuation that's performed in 2 years.
Okay.
Sounds good.
Yep.
Any other discussion?
Has it been seconded?
It has.
Yes. It
has.
Will.
Just a point of clarification, the ADC in there, that was for 2018. You were mentioned this year for 2019. I think 2019 would look slightly different given you've got $2.5 million for 2018. Now that's an easy calculation to do, but that if the basis of your contribution will be based on the action today, I just wanted to point that out that the ADC for 2019 would be a little bit different.
So it'd be slightly different than that.
Yeah, now we can calculate it based on the 30-year amortization, but now you've got $2.5 million sitting in there at 12/31/18, which you didn't at 1/1/18. And you know, we can still show you that and say, here's the, so maybe you adopt the report for the accounting purposes, and even well, for all intents and purposes, because the ADC is 2018, and then direct us to say, well, provide a new report for the ADC for 2019. Does that make
how
sense?
Much more or is that a
I think that we can, if the board opts, to adopt the report, we can have Millen provide what the ADC for 2019 is and pay that amount. If that's part of the motion, with it sounds like it's within the ballpark of the number that you provided already. Is that correct?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's if you stuck with the 30-year amortization, it's probably going to be, call it $150,000-$160,000 less. If you change the amortization down to 15 years, it might end up about right where it is right now. So I guess that's the quick answer.
So maker of the motion, to me, we've all heard people want to pay it faster. So there is no such thing as overpaying it because it's our asset. So I say we just use the number.
Yeah, I mean, I'm looking at the subject line of the letter. It's the actuarial valuation of OPEB benefits for staff and retirees as of December 31, 2018. Right? This is the snapshot of what is the case before us and what has been. And I thought our obligation under GASB is to identify what that actuarial valuation is based on the assumptions, full public disclosure, and accept it as such. If we change it in 2019, then we change it in 2019.
Yeah.
But this is last year, right? This
right.
is correct. The state of what is. So that's, to me, I think we've given a lot of direction, both mm-hmm. to staff and to Milliman, about what we might want to see as options going forward. But as we sit here today, as of December 31, 2018, it is what it is, right?
Just
right.
Okay.
I would keep the motion as is.
Okay.
Any further discussion?
So we would put the ADC of the 500 or so in for this year.
For now, until we give you new direction.
Yeah.
Yes.
So okay. I got it.
Okay.
And that's with interest through December 31st, and here we are in February. I mean, are we going to add more interest, or is that just trivial?
Because I would think it would be of a trivial nature, 1 month's right. interest, and yeah.
Full council.
And the motion was to adopt this valuation as presented.
Right. Yes.
Yes. Mm-hmm.
With a request
direction.
With respect to a particular item on how the assumed rate of return was developed.
Yes.
So much drama on an OPEB valuation. I love it. Any further comments or questions? Seeing none, all those in favor of the motion say aye.
Aye. Aye.
Oppose? Abstain?
One follow-up. Could we possibly get the number for 1919 as well, as long as we're at it? Now I'm getting interested in that.
I think we should.
Great. Thank you.
Are you serious?
No,
he's joking.
Okay.
Sorry.